Catholic Views. I'm your host, Renee Kranz. On today's show, we are going to talk to Chris Motes, the Executive Director of the South Dakota Catholic Conference. We're going to talk about socialism and how it relates to Catholicism. And are the two compatible? We will find out. First, we're going to hang out with Dr. B with some Biblical Bites with Dr. B.
Oh, you're supposed to sing the jingle.
What's the
Biblical Bites with Dr. B?
Okay, but just a minute ago you sang it in German.
Ja und now.
Okay, don't.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Don't. All right, what do you got?
We have to take this seriously. Pop quiz, Renee.
I think I'd be
really surprised. It's gonna be a very small percentage. I'm putting everybody.
Now you have to
I think
ask
you're putting
me.
The priests in this pool.
Okay. Bill, you ready?
I am.
Okay.
How many times does the entrance antiphon, and the first reading come from the same book of Scripture?
How would I know that? Bill?
Once every 3 years.
Once. good guess. I'll have to verify your vote.
So you don't know?
No, I don't know for sure, but it's not very often at all.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was an option.
It happens.
Could have said that.
It happened today. The first reading is from the book of Sirach, as is the entrance antiphon.
Okay.
Sirach. Do you know who the author of Sirach, the book of Sirach, is?
That's Old Testament, right?
Yes.
Moses?
No.
I have no idea.
Jesus.
Huh? Oh, well, he's the author of the Bible. So.
No. Jesus wrote the book of Sirach.
You said he didn't write anything the other day on the show.
That Jesus didn't write anything.
Oh.
But this Jesus did. So the book of Sirach
if I were to
write a book of the Bible, which God would never do, didn't do, apparently. I don't know why. I guess it wasn't old enough.
I'm not going to comment on that.
It'd be the book of Bergwald. The book of Sirach is the author of the book of Sirach is Jesus, son of Sirach.
Okay.
Or Jesus ben Sirach.
Okay.
So so the name Jesus, so this is kind of the one thing just I think most of us are not aware of. Jesus was actually a common name.
Like
at
John.
Jesus' time. Like John is for us now. Jesus, Yeshua. What if you were to think of Old Testament names, Bill, if you were to think of an Old Testament name.
Haha, Bill.
Yeshua. Does it sound like anything? Yeshua.
Joshua.
Oh, it does.
Joshua. So Jesus' name is actually the same name as the English version, the anglicized version of Yeshua for the guy who helped Moses was Joshua, but the anglicized version of the name Yeshua for the guy who saved the world is Jesus.
Yeah.
But Jesus and Joshua are actually the same Hebrew name.
Okay.
And even in the time leading up to Jesus, so there were all sorts of, I think us as Christians, Catholics living in the 21st century, there's only one Jesus. Actually, no, there were all sorts of Jesuses running around.
Yeah. Then you meet a guy nowadays named Jesus, you're like, oh.
Yeah, right.
But, how dare you?
But in Spanish culture,
yes,
Jesus is not there's more than one guy named Jesus in Spanish culture, right? And for us, I don't know why. We just don't do that as English speakers.
Right.
I don't know anybody like Chris, Bill, Jesus.
yeah. None.
But Jesus was a common name. And do you remember what it means? I know. Pop quiz again. I'm sorry. Jesus, God saves.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah.
God.
I was going to say that.
God saves. So... With Jesus of Nazareth, he would have been known as Jesus ben Joseph.
Okay.
Son of Joseph, even though he wasn't literally. Jesus, the son of Joseph, the son of Mary. His name is true, literally true in his case, because he is God. Mm-hmm. But there had been Israelites for over 1,000 years who had that name Yeshua, which is just a reminder that God saves. It just so happens that in Jesus's case, he is the God who saves. He is literally Yeshua.
Right.
God who saves. Okay. So that's, I just want to highlight that. And just a little bit here in the little time we have left. So the book of Sirach is actually not, it's in effect his last name, Ben Sirach. His first name was Jesus. And this book was written, it's a really profound, book of moral instruction of the Jewish wisdom tradition, even before Jesus came. In fact, the other name, I won't do a pop quiz to you, the other name for the book of Sirach is Ecclesiasticus.
I'm glad you didn't ask me that.
Ecclesiasticus, which sounds like it's from the word for church, because the early church used this Old Testament book all the time to teach the church's moral teachings, because so much of Sirach reflects the moral truths of our faith. So Jesus ben Sirach, another Jesus, wrote this profound book of moral teachings that we still read today.
I like it. Thanks, Dr. B.
You bet.
Joining me in the studio today is Chris Motes. He's the executive director of the South Dakota Catholic Conference. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Or whatever time it is when you're listening to this. I always forget. I shouldn't say good morning.
Well, could be
hello,
afternoon.
Chris.
Hey.
So we're going to talk today about a subject that seems to be very popular, but also really misunderstood, and that is socialism and how that meshes with our faith as Catholics, and does it. And can we espouse that kind of idea? So before we start, can you, as best you can, define socialism for us?
Yeah, I'll take a crack at it. It can be a little hard to define, because it's not like the Catholic Church where we've got magisterium and we can go to the catechism and like, here's the source. We can just sort of look historically at the theorists that have sort of articulated this theory. And then we can look at the governments that have sought to, and the states that have sought to put the theory into practice. But we can identify some kind of key features, mm-hmm. Throughout just historically as we're looking at socialism as a movement. First, that within society, the major part of the means of production, goods and services, is in some sense socially owned and operated by the state, either socialized or maybe through cooperative enterprises. That's mm-hmm. the first feature. Second feature would be a feature where rights of private property and economic initiative aren't acknowledged. So no private property seeking to really exterminate it.
Right.
Number three, free markets are suppressed. So free market being, you know, you want to work for yourself. You know how to sew. You buy a sewing machine, and you put a sign on your door that says, "I sew pants," or whatever, you know. So no more free market. You would have to, you wouldn't be able to do that. And then number four, a system in which the state usurps the God-given rights and duties of both the family and the church. And the family, we of course, as Catholics know, is the domestic church, but even just sociologically, politically, anthropologically, like the family is so important as that basic building block of society, as mm-hmm. what we can truly call the first society. Socialism would seek to displace both the family and the church as bedrock institutions in the life of men and women.
Right. Okay. Doesn't sound great to me so far. But a lot of people hear about socialism as something that would promise equality, a good standard of living, and solidarity. So the good standard of living one, I think, is tricky, because it might depend on who you're talking to.
Yeah.
I'm going to get myself in trouble probably right away. So the way I see it is if they equal everything out, they're not going to equal it out at the high end. They're going to equal it out at the low end, because that's the only way they're going to be able to do it. There's only going to be so much production,
right.
I had to do that in quotes, happening. So there's only going to be so much available.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And this, what you've pointed out, that there's some like really attractive, maybe buzzwords like, mm-hmm. you know, equality, justice, et cetera. And Pope Paul VI, Saint Paul VI, in commenting on socialism, said the same thing, is that there Christians can be really attracted to it for these reasons. But ultimately, we actually have to reject it, you know, properly understood, insofar as it denies the full nature of who we are as men and women. This is what St. John Paul II went on to say about socialism, you know, writing, I guess it would have been about 30 years after Paul VI. John Paul said that the fundamental error of socialism is anthropological in nature. Socialism considers the individual person simply as an element, a molecule within the social organism. We've maybe heard the phrase like a cog in a machine.
Right.
That's what he means.
Right.
He goes on, so that the good of the individual is completely subordinated to the functioning of the socioeconomic mechanism. Socialism likewise maintains that the good of the individual can be realized without reference to his free choice. So that's the first point I would say about these sort of noble ideals of equality and justice, and everybody's going to have, you know, just a great standard of living, is that John Paul would maybe ask, well, first of all, let's say that that's true. Let's say that everybody is going to be very prosperous. Mm-hmm. He would say, well, what do you want to be? Do you want to be prosperous or you want to be free?
Right.
You know?
Some people might say prosperous.
And they might. So, and through the years, as watching socialism as a movement develop, the popes have, this is from the very beginning of the 20th century, they've also pointed out that it doesn't actually produce prosperity.
Right. It never has in history.
It never has in history. You know, you can even look at North Korea, South Korea. The South Koreans, on average, are 2 inches taller than the North Koreans. And it's not a genetic difference.
I had no idea.
It's due to malnutrition.
Sure.
In North Korea.
Right.
So, it doesn't actually work out that way, even if we would accept that premise.
Yeah. With North Korea as an example, some people would probably say that that's not a socialist country. But I think you have to remember that socialism typically is an economic system, not a governmental system, where they have socialism as their economic system, but totalitarianism as their governmental system.
Yeah.
And the two work together in that case.
That's a fair point. And that's something, so one of the very first papal documents that began to reflect upon socialism was Rerum Novarum. It was an encyclical of Pope Leo XIII written in 1891. Rerum Novarum means to make all things new. And he's reflecting upon the theory that he's seeing sort of gain traction within academic circles, if you will, or
This is probably Marx at the time.
Yeah, right. So it's following Marx, but it hadn't yet been tried in government. So there's one of the next big encyclicals commenting is called Quadragesimo Anno. It means on the 40th year. So it's 40 years later. It's 1931, Pope Pius XI. And Pope Pius XI at this time, he draws, kind of gets down into the details because they've seen it in practice now with the Russian Revolution. And he draws this distinction between kind of these different forms of socialism, if you will. So if we got this theory with these really noble principles that are flawed in many ways. But then he goes on to talk about communism too. And this really radical totalitarian form of government.
Right. And that very often goes hand in hand with socialism, or eventually does.
It's the same pathway, really. You know, so it's but the a communist state is, as you've put it very well, is totalitarian. So it's not just sort of in the realm of an economic philosophy of, hey, this would be a good way, but it's actually in practice we're enforcing this upon people.
Right.
So we've seen this played out. You know, it's not just going back to the Russian Revolution, but this is it's not just North Korea. We can even point to the second largest economy in the world, China. You know, for years, a one-child policy. You know, the government.
And still.
Yeah, and still. And I think they've realized that that this is actually not good even for their state. So it's now two children, or if you live in a rural area, it's three. But imagine if the government was telling you how many children you can have.
Yeah.
You know, and this is what one of these first points that we highlighted about socialism is that it's usurping the family.
Right.
Well, why is that necessary? Why, according to a socialist mode of thought, why is that necessary? because we conceive of human persons as cogs in a machine, as completely material ends. We have completely dismissed the noble creativity that people can exercise as free, rational human beings. We've completely dismissed the spiritual ends of human flourishing.
Mm-hmm.
So
that seems like a really scary thought. And what happens to when you start to get into something like that? I think we see it in China, for instance, to religion. I know that the Catholic Church is not fully suppressed in China, but it is certainly governed to a degree by the Chinese government, or they're trying to, at least.
Right, and that's been a subject of some controversy in recent years. Just as the Holy See, in its diplomatic relations, has been engaging with China and wanting to really establish a solid basis for the church there. But it's incredibly, at best, tenuous, because the very system of thought upon which the state relies is one in which there are no institutions of civil society of which the church is has a prime place. There is nothing but the individual and the state.
Right.
That's it, and that's completely antithetical to our understanding of the great goods of life.
Right.
You know, our understanding as Catholics, mm-hmm. the great goods of life,
mm-hmm.
of a worshiping community of faith as a family, that place where children are conceived and brought into the world through the bond of love of a man and a woman, that the family being that first place where we learn how to give and receive love. Like, this conception doesn't exist mm-hmm. within a strict socialist cast of thought.
Right.
So, and even, you know, I've got small children, my wife and I, we love watching our kids play with their cousins. But imagine, think about the one child policy,
mm-hmm.
China, that existed for so many years. No brothers and sisters, no aunts and uncles,
no cousins. Never even thought about that.
Yeah. It's just, you're completely atomized.
Yeah.
So.
It really takes the community out of community.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing there to even, I mean, we as Catholics are supposed to go out and help and be a community and serve. There's like nothing to serve.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So shifting gears just a little bit, and we'll get to the actual question of can Catholics be socialist in a second. But we often hear, especially now, that, we don't mean socialism like that. We mean democratic socialism.
Mm.
So how is that different, if you can give us a small idea of that? And is it really that different? Is it, what happens if we go there?
Yeah, I would say that it is different. So remember the first feature of socialism, when we defined it at the start of our conversation, the first feature is that the society has the major part of the means of production, goods and services, are in some sense socially owned or operated by the state or a cooperative enterprise. That would be distinct from, what do you call it, social democracy, mm-hmm. or what we can call a social welfare state. So a socialist planned economy, on the one hand, is different. It's distinct from, and we can describe the differences, from a market economy with a very generous social welfare program,
okay.
which is not itself immune from critique. We can still, you know, critique that and describe its different features and analyze them and so forth. But those are, we can say, different things. I think it would be fair to say that some of the same tendencies exist. So one of our great concerns with socialism, sort of the first of these two, is that it violates subsidiarity in very major ways. So that subsidiarity being that Catholic principle by which a higher authority should subside or hold back on those matters that it can properly be dealt with by lower levels of society.
Right. So more of a keep things local.
I mean, the big, you know, when I go up to a lobby in Pierre, the big like phrase that they love up there, especially in education matters, is local control, local control, which isn't an absolute. It's sort of the lowest competent form. So sometimes there may be things that in which, you know, maybe a family isn't due to illness, due to some brokenness or woundedness, really needs help from a higher society, if you will. So they can get help from extended family, from the church, from institutions of civil society where they live, or maybe from the government, you know, maybe from local government, state government, federal government. But these are all prudential decisions. But this concern about subsidiarity is something we could talk about, too, when we're talking about a social democracy, meaning a market economy with generous social welfare programs.
I might have to pick that one up on another episode, because that's something that would be really good to understand. So it's a really good tenet of the church that we don't really understand very much. We don't talk about. So now that we've kind of defined these a little bit, can a Catholic be socialist?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it all depends on how do you define the words socialist. And if we're going with the features that we described at the very, very beginning, the answer is clearly no. Now, actually, for folks that want to dive in and learn a little more, an organization called Catholic Answers, it does Catholic apologetics. They've published a book. Trent Horn is one of their apologists. The name of the book is that exact question: can a Catholic be socialist? And they conclude no, and they lay it all out. They do have a really nice debate up on YouTube in which they have a faithful Catholic theologian take the position yes. It seems to me, and as I watch that debate, it's like, well, actually, because this movement, it's like, well, how do you pin it down? When you pin it down and describe its features like we did at the start, it's like, well, obviously no. Yet at the same time, the ideals that a socialist would espouse, we want fairness.
And we want to take care of the poor.
We want to take care of the poor. And when we talk about equality, like, we all have equal dignity as children of God. That doesn't mean that you and I are equal in every way.
Right.
But we do have equal dignity. God made us. He loves us. Justice. We can, these principles, these words, they really resonate, and they can very properly. But at the same time, when we drill down into the details, it's very, very difficult to say that a Catholic could be a socialist.
Right. And unfortunately, a lot of times you start to allow the government to do too many things, they will continue to do more things. And that almost always leads a country to a bad place.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to be allowed as people to be able to make our own decisions, to be able to help each other ourselves instead of letting the government do it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's part of our Catholic identity.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, you are sort of reciting now the pontificate of St. John Paul II,
freedom. I didn't even know that.
freedom and responsibility.
Yeah.
Freedom and responsibility. Not freedom in the sense of do whatever you want.
Right.
But you are free to be good.
Right.
And it's your obligation to actually be good, and you use your freedom to do it.
Right. Right. And I think that's so huge. This is another place I might get myself in trouble. So give me the stink eye if I do, okay?
I can't imagine.
Oh, sure. To me, when you start to talk about socialism, communism, Marxism, socialism seems to be like the gateway. So to me, it seems like sort of a, for lack of a better way to say it, but like a soft slavery. Like it eventually puts people in a position that you're at the mercy of your government. And I don't know what happens if you're a religious person, if it keeps going down that road and further and further and further to a point where now your faith is seen as the enemy to the government. So now I'm not saying that socialism does that all the time, but it has in the past. And so we know it can.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think that'd be a fair assessment. You know, it can be really attractive to like, we know we have this saying, there's no such thing as a free lunch, but like, who doesn't, you know, one of the buzz phrases now is free college.
Yeah.
Like, who doesn't want that? Or free healthcare. Who doesn't want that?
Right.
I mean, that's just not the way the world works, though. Right. It's like everything costs money and it's got to come from somewhere.
Yes. Especially if you want it to be good.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I don't want to wait 10 weeks to get that test I needed on, you know, to find out something that I'm waiting for medically. And now I, you know, because
that's right.
That is something that starts to happen. And
yeah. And this is one of the things that a market economy unleashes is the great untapped in many times potential. I shouldn't say untapped, but human creativity and freedom needs to be developed. And this is the role of education and, mm-hmm. and the family and church and schools. But to develop human creativity in a way that the market can capture, if you will, in a competitive, like healthy way. And that's not to say that no limits are just. That's not the Catholic understanding of a market economy, mm-hmm. that we can never have any limits.
Right.
But at the same time, to sort of suppress creativity is to, that's why going back to John Paul again, it's the fundamental error is an anthropological one. It has to do with our understanding of man and woman.
Right. Which is what we're doing as Catholics. I mean, that's part of what we're doing is trying to understand ourselves, understand our role with God, our faith, and obviously get everybody to heaven many as we can.
Amen.
So I think we'll need to have you back to talk about subsidiarity at some point.
Yep.
And I also want to, at some point with you, talk about capitalism.
Yeah.
And early on, when our founders kind of created our country, there was this thought about capitalism and a republic that it's for a moral and just people. Mm. So when you separate capitalism and morality, what happens? And maybe that's a little bit of where we are now in some instances. So I'd love to talk about those kind of things. Maybe before the election, maybe
I'd love
after
to do
the
it.
Election.
No.
I don't know. We'll see if we can squeeze it in.
I'd love to come back.
Yeah, I think it would be really good to do that. Awesome. Great. Thank you for the discussion. I hope that it got some, at least some juices going for some people and that you'll want to go out and learn more. Catholic Answers is a great one. Catholic.com is where you can find them. I haven't read that book, but I've heard about it and I really, really want to get my hands on it.
It looks great.
And see what the church, what they're talking about as far as the church and that and socialism and how we can look at that together. Awesome. Thanks, Chris Motes.
Great to be here.
All right. So next week, Chris will actually return again and we're going to talk about the church's teaching on social justice. This is a very misunderstood teaching of the church, especially today, because there is this idea of social justice that's kind of different from the church's teaching. That's it for us today. Hope you'll join us again next week for more Catholic Views.